Well, I am glad to be back here with you. Welcome back, Thailand team. Glad to be able to see you. This is one of the joys of being able to come back a second time to see the rest of you guys. I wanted to share a little bit with you about the ministry I do before we kind of jump into today's message. I mentioned last time that I was a part of an organization called Barnabas. Today, I'm actually going to share about another ministry. I'm in too many ministries, but I'm in another ministry called Standing Stone Ministry, and I wanted to share a little bit about that today before we jump in. So Standing Stone Ministry is very similar to Barnabas. At Standing Stone, we shepherd the shepherds. Okay, so we come alongside those that are shepherding the church, pastors, missionaries, ministry leaders, campus leaders. We come alongside them. And so I shared a little bit about what we do, but I want to share today a little bit about why we do it. Okay, so if we can have that slide up there. These are just some statistics that have come across in the past several years, that 65% of pastors don't have one trusted friend. Okay, and it might seem kind of surprising, but as a pastor, you kind of get consumed with your church world, and that becomes your whole world. And so if things kind of go on, especially with the church, you don't have a lot of people who you can share with. And a lot of people that I meet with, they say that I can't even share with my spouse because I don't want her to have a hardened heart towards the church either. So they don't have any safe space where they can kind of process things going on in their life. 59% of pastors don't feel qualified to lead. Okay, a lot of the pastors that I meet with are younger. We want to try to be more proactive versus crisis care. So that's ultimately kind of our heart. 90% of pastors say that ministry is completely different from what they expected. Okay, I know that was true for me when I first started in ministry. The last two are actually one of the things that really stirred me to actually leave pastoral ministry, which I did for 25 years, and to do this full time. 50% of seminary graduates leave the ministry within the first 5 years. Okay, so you can kind of do the math a little bit in terms of that. And last one, we are losing 1,500 pastors a month in the United States. When I first heard that, I was thinking, do we have that many churches in the United States that we can lose 1,500 pastors a month? But you can see by the statistics, and actually during COVID, the effects have been much worse. And when we realize what's been happening, not just to the church, but those that lead the church, you can see how important this kind of ministry is. And if you think about just strategically about how we want to support the church and how we want to be a part of God's body in the church, you can see how this is so important. The number of people that are entering seminary has been declining, and the number of people that are leaving ministry has been increasing. So it doesn't take a lot to realize that in the future that we realize who is going to be pastoring the churches, who is going to be shepherding Christ's body. And you really realize that we need people to stand in the gap and to stand with people, to stand with those that are standing for everyone else, but they're not standing for themselves. And that's constantly what I see, is that they're caring for everyone else, but no one is caring for them. And so this is where I want to do, and this is where I've kind of devoted my time and my ministry now to do this. I wanted to give you just a little snapshot of what we've been doing. So if you go to the next slide. This is a ministry report just from last year that met with 46 different pastors and ministry leaders that represented 35 different churches. And all those churches represent thousands of other kind of church members. Also ministered to 250 different college students with the power of the gospel through the Be Free ministry. And so these are just kind of a little bit snapshot of what we do. And I remember I just met this past week a missionary that I had been meeting with. He was a missionary in Mongolia, and he was on furlough with his wife, and that furlough went from 6 months to 3 years because he just realized just how much he was burnt out and how much he just could not continue and to go back into the field. I started meeting with him, and then he didn't realize just how bad of a position he was in until we started to be able to just process. And then he started to let his guard down and to really share all of the things, all of the burdens, all of the stresses, all the strains that's happened in his marriage. And so we just spent the past 3 years just walking together and just had a wonderful praise report that he's returning back to Mongolia. So praise God for that, that he's going to be back into the field. And those are just some of the stories that really have come across, just walking together with people, to helping them to be restored, to be renewed, to not just be surviving, but to be thriving. You know, and that's really my desire, not just for these pastors, but for all of us. You know, not just to be surviving, but thriving. So I wanted to give you an opportunity, if you felt led, to want to sow into my ministry here, because he keeps bringing up Matthew 11, 28 through 30. So then I asked the Lord, why do you keep bringing this up, right? I know this passage. I love this passage. I quote this passage. I memorize this passage, right? And then he told me, you don't understand this passage. I was like, what are you talking about, Lord? You don't understand this passage. That's why you need to keep coming back here so often, because you don't understand this invitation. You understand verse 28, which is an invitation to those who are weak and weary and heavy laden and needing rest. You understand verse 28. You don't understand verse 29 and verse 30. You don't understand my remedy for this. Because you don't understand my remedy for this is the reason you need to keep coming back to this over and over and over and over and over again. You understand the reason, but you don't understand the remedy, is what the Lord is telling me. And then he started slowly me taking me word by word through this passage and start showing me how much I really didn't understand. Well, let's start with verse 29. It says, verse 28, like I said, we're all kind of familiar with that. All who are weary and labored and heavy laden. Verse 29 says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me. Okay, so when we look at this idea of taking Jesus' yoke on, okay, we don't live in an agricultural society, so if you're not familiar with what a yoke is, let's look at this next picture. This is what a yoke is, okay? The yoke is that big wooden bar that are connecting these two oxen together. Okay, so if you look at these two, I don't know which one's you and which one's Jesus, but this is supposed to represent what's happening in Matthew 11, 29, when Jesus says, put my yoke upon you, to be yoked together with me. Okay? To understand what this is meaning and why this kind of doesn't make sense is, the oxen don't wear this yoke all the time. They're not rocking this yoke wherever they go. The only time they wear the yoke is when? When it's time to work. Jesus was saying, you don't understand this passage. And I was like, you're right. These people are already tired. They're tired of working. And what is Jesus' invitation to them is? Is to work. That doesn't make any sense. How come he's telling people who are tired from working and worn out and burnt out and really at their last wit's end to now invite them to come to work? And then he was telling me, you don't understand what it means to work. And you don't understand what it means to rest. Because I thought rest means no work. I thought resting means you're supposed to not do any work. And sure, there is times for that, but that's not the only time. Because Jesus says, if you put my yoke upon me, what is the result? You will find rest for your souls. He's inviting us to a rest, but he's inviting us to a rest that comes from work. Now, if you can understand this, this is huge. Because how many want this kind of working rest? I know I do. I know I do. So this is where the Lord started to show me and start to reveal things. So one of the passages he took me to is 2 Corinthians 6:14. Okay, so let's take a look at that. 2 Corinthians 6:14 says, do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. For what partnership has righteousness with lawlessness, or what fellowship has light with darkness? Okay? This passage is very commonly used by pastors for what? Marriage and dating. Okay? I don't know. How many of you guys have heard that in that context? I know I have used that in that context. Pastor Sam, I don't know if you've used this in this context. But how many know this passage has nothing to do with marriage? This has nothing to do with marriage. But I understand why, okay, that people like me use this for marriage. And the reason is what this means to be unequally yoked. When the Bible says, do not be unequally yoked with the unbeliever, is he saying that we're not supposed to have any relationships with those that don't know Christ? Is he saying you're not supposed to have any kind of friendship with people that don't know the Lord? Is that what this Bible is saying? No, of course not. That's not what he's saying. He's saying you can't have this deeply intimate relationship with those that don't know Jesus. You can't be intimately connected like in the marriage relationship, in the marriage covenant, because you don't have the same foundation. If you don't have the same foundation, how can you have that deep level of intimate connection with this other person? That's why even though this passage is not referring directly to marriage, we often quote it in the context of marriage because that's supposed to be the kind of intimacy we're supposed to experience in the marriage relationship. This deep level of connectedness and intimacy with them. This word that Paul uses in 2 Corinthians 6:14, be unequally yoked, is the same word he uses in Matthew 11. Let's go back and look at that. Matthew 11, verse 29, Jesus says what? Take my yoke upon you. When we look at Jesus' invitation, this is first an invitation for intimacy. This really changed my idea because when I thought about Jesus' invitation about taking this big, heavy yoke, a yoke actually was 50 to 70 pounds, right? And to think about I'm really tired and worn out and you're wanting me to put this heavy bar on my shoulder, that's supposed to help me to have rest? That doesn't make any sense. Until you start realizing that this bar that you're supposed to be putting on, that Jesus' yoke, it's supposed to connect you side by side with Jesus. It's supposed to keep you close and intimate with him. This is what it means to be yoked together with Jesus, to be connected side by side, intimately connected with Jesus. Just like Paul was saying that we can't have this with an unbeliever, Jesus is saying you can have this with me. You can have this deeply abided connection where we're intimately connected side by side. And when you thought this bar was a burden or a hindrance or something that takes away your freedom, he is showing me this, realizing this is keeping you exactly where you want to be. This bar is keeping you exactly where you want to be. Side with me. And I want to tell you, there's no way we can experience rest while we're working unless we have Jesus' yoke. Unless we have this yoke that keeps us tied together with him, we'll never experience a working rest. He started showing me and revealing me through this passage, and as he did, I felt like, really, things started kind of lifting, and I felt like it doesn't feel so heavy anymore. Because I understood the heart of his invitation. Is it an invitation to work? Yeah. But it's an invitation how we work. That's the difference. Then he started showing me something else. Whenever I picture this idea of Jesus inviting us to his yoke, I don't know where I got this idea. It's not in the Bible. It's not in this passage. But I always had the picture of, like, I don't have any yoke on, and I take Jesus' yoke, and I put on my yoke, and then I'm yoked together with Jesus. But then he started addressing that and saying, is that true? Is that your starting place? Is that your starting place? You don't have any yoke on, and then you come and you take Jesus' yoke and you put it on your shoulders? Saying, that's not true. You're already starting with what? You're already starting with your own yoke. Look at this passage in Galatians 5:1. Galatians 5:1 says, Paul says, it's for freedom that Christ set us free. Okay, you first read that, you're thinking, well, duh, Paul, like, why else would he free us unless it was to be free, right? But then he continues and says, therefore, keep standing firm and do not be subject again to the yoke of slavery. That word yoke is, again, the same word that Jesus uses in Matthew 11, this yoke of slavery. Paul is saying that Jesus broke this yoke off of our shoulders. This yoke that we were carrying, he broke that. He freed us from that. But that freedom is not automatic. The freedom is free, but experiencing the freedom is not automatic. That's why he says you need to stand firm. He broke that off of you so you don't have to carry your life on your own anymore. He broke that yoke off of your shoulders so you're not carrying the whole weight of everything anymore. He broke it off of you. He's saying you need to stand firm and not go back to the yoke of slavery. What is the yoke of slavery? It's your own yoke where you're in control, where everything is up to you. Everything in your life is up to you. Everything in your work is up to you. Everything in your family. Yeah, that's up to you. That's your responsibility. That's what you need to carry. Your mental health. That's all up to you. You have to carry that. Your kids. Your job. That's all up to you. Paul is saying, Jesus came to set us free from this yoke. He said, you need to stand firm. Don't go back and take this broken yoke, put it back together with crazy glue, and put it back onto your shoulder. Because you can. That's why he's saying you need to stand firm, because you can do that. It's interesting when I think about this, because when I look at what happened here, and he says, because you have your own yoke on your shoulder, he was telling me, this is why you need to keep coming to Matthew 11, 28 through 30. It's because you have your own yoke on, where you're doing all the pulling, you're doing all the directing, you're pulling this heavy load behind you, and you get tired. And then when you get tired, what do? You go to passages like Matthew 11, 20 through 30, and then you do what? You do what every good Christian should do, which is what? You ask Jesus for help. When you're tired and you're so worn out and you're burnt out, you can't handle it anymore and you can't pull this load anymore, you should do what? You should ask God for help. Isn't that what we should do? I want to tell you today, that's not what you should do. That's not what you should do. Because what we're really saying is, Jesus, I'm so tired of pulling this heavy load. Can you come and help me pull? Can you come to my yoke and help me pull this load, because it's too heavy for me? This is too hard. I'm so tired of carrying this heavy load every day, day after day. I'm so tired. God, help me. What are we saying? Can you come to my yoke and help me, because I need your help? And I want to tell you today that Jesus doesn't want to come to your yoke. He wants you to come to his. Let me say that again. Jesus doesn't want to come to your yoke. He does go to your yoke, but it's because of his grace and mercy. He comes to our yoke and he responds to our cry when we're crying out to our Father that we need help to pull this heavy load, but he does it because of his grace and his mercy. Not because this is his remedy for us. In fact, sometimes when we cry out to him for help and he doesn't come, we have to understand why. It's because he doesn't want us to keep supporting this idea, you have to do all the pulling. He doesn't want you to keep inviting him to our yoke. And so sometimes he won't come. Sometimes he doesn't want to keep supporting this idea that I have to do it or nothing's going to happen. He doesn't want to keep reinforcing that belief that we want to keep this yoke of slavery on our necks. What do we need to do to receive Jesus' invitation? What do we need to do to receive this rest that he wants to give us? See, this next point is we need to take off of our yoke. You need to take off your own yoke in order to put Jesus' yoke on. Because I just want to tell you, Jesus is not going to put his yoke on top of yours. Jesus is not going to put his yoke on top of yours. There can only be one Lord. Either it's going to be you or it's going to be him. And I want to ask you, which one do you want to enjoy? Which one do you want to enjoy? when we think about taking off of our yoke, and when I was thinking about this whole thing of Matthew 11, he was like showing me what the invitation was, and I was like, that's beautiful, this invitation to side-by-side intimacy with God, and da-da-da. But then I started realizing, wow, it requires surrender. It requires for me to give up control. And then I started realizing, wow, I have a lot to do before I can even accept this invitation that he's starting to show me. There was a season in my life when we were going through a lot of hardship in my family. And it was started out with my wife getting these migraine headaches. And if you ever had migraine headaches, you know like how painful it is. But so she would have these different migraine headaches that keep popping up. And then they started getting longer. You know, it lasts for like a day, and then it started lasting for 2-3 days, and then it'd go away. And then it'd come back, and it'd last for 2-3 days, and then go away. And then eventually, it started getting longer, and then she would have it for like a week. You know, and she's incredibly strong. She just pushed through and still go to work, and I couldn't believe how she was doing this at the time. But eventually, the time in between started getting shorter and shorter and shorter until there was no more break. She had it every day. She had constant migraine headache every day. And I don't know if you've ever had chronic pain in your life, but it wears you down. And she had this chronic pain every single day for 5 years. 5 years. We went to every single doctor, neurologist. They prescribed every single medication on earth, I feel like, and she went through all of those different things, and nothing. We had no answers. We couldn't find out what the reason why she was experiencing all of this tremendous pain. She ended up having to retire. She had lost all of her, you know, sick days and all these other things, and she eventually had to lose her job. You know, we're in this terrible situation. And then finally in 2016, we got a diagnosis. And she got diagnosed with a rare condition called moyamoya. And this moyamoya disease, if you don't know what it is, there's two arteries that go up to the brain that supply blood to the brain. And over time, those arteries become occluded. They get blocked, kind of like your heart artery gets blocked. And eventually, you need a bypass, okay? But no one really gets diagnosed from this because the only way you can find it is to take an MRI of the brain. And you don't normally just get an MRI of the brain, you know? So normally, the way it turns out is someone has a stroke, okay? Because what happens is those arteries get clogged up, and so the body is miraculous how God made it. It's because those main arteries get blocked, these side arteries start growing to supply blood for the brain. There's little collateral arteries, and those supply blood, but they're so small. They're not meant to carry that much blood. So what eventually happens is that they'll burst, and the person will have a stroke. That's usually how it gets diagnosed. My wife was carrying this, from what we found, ever since junior high. Did not have a stroke. Had it diagnosed. Then we went up to Stanford and got bypass surgery, just like similar bypass surgery for the heart. They took arteries from her legs, and she had brain surgery on the right side and the left side. They planted these arteries onto her brain. When the surgeon opened up her skull and had this brain surgery, he came up to it and said, "This is even worse than I thought. She is a miracle. One of the arteries is 100% blocked, and the other one was 96% blocked. I don't understand how she lived this long with so little blood to her brain." You know, we're going through this, and we're just recognizing God's hand over her, that she hadn't gotten a stroke, and then she was living this long, and da-da-da. And then we came home, and, you know, the tests showed that they increased blood flow. But because she had this for so long, her brain was not used to this much blood flow. So what eventually happened is that she had a stroke. And so we had to go to the hospital, and they were thinking of doing a stent and all these different things. And Eventually, God just totally repaired her miraculously, and then she's in recovery after the stroke, and she's meeting with the nurses and the physical therapists, and they're saying, they're just testing her, and then she's having, like, no side effects from the stroke. And they're saying, wow, you're so lucky. And I was thinking, this is not luck. This is not luck. And so eventually she comes out from rehabilitating, and then we take her home. And then a few weeks later, it happened again. She had a second stroke. We're back into the hospital again. And we go through the whole process again of them examining what is going on, what's happening. And then God resolves the bleed again. She's in physical therapy again and going through all these things again. It's like Groundhog Day. And then we see the same nurses saying, you're back again? I couldn't believe it. And so we're going through this time. And she's recovering again. And the same thing happened. She has no deficits. She has full mobility of all her body. All her language is coming back. She has no deficits at all. And so we return back home. And then it happened a third time. She had a third stroke. We were in the hospital basically for 3 months, consistently all during that time. The third time, the same thing happened. God restored her again. And if you looked her, you look at her this to this day, you would never have guessed anything happened to her at all. She is a walking miracle. And so we're going through this time. And my kids are going through this time. My kids are young at this time. And she was, like I said, I couldn't believe how the Lord sustained her through the time. But for me, I struggled with so much fear and so much pain and so much anxiety. So much so that my stomach felt like an ulcer. And my friend said, you need to go get scoped and all this stuff. And I was like, I know it's fear, but yeah, it should be safe to go get it checked out. I go get checked out, and there's nothing, which I already knew. This is fear. This is fear. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't function. Our whole church family, they just carried us. They were, like, staying overnight at the hospital with my wife, Susan. They were here with us and driving my kids to school and taking care of me, and I was just like the Mark chapter 2 there. I was on the stretcher, and they were just carrying me everywhere. I couldn't function. I couldn't do anything. I had no faith during this time, zero faith. I was just being carried by my church body during this time. And the Lord slowly brought us out of that, slowly started recovering my wife and bringing her back to full health. And, you know, during this time, the Lord was starting to recover my kids and starting to recover me. And it was at this period of coming out, it was like 2017 going into 2018, I prayed this prayer. And this prayer actually, I look back, changed my life. And when I look back, I don't even know why I prayed this prayer. Because honestly, I don't think I wanted what I prayed. It was something in my spirit because it sure wasn't in my flesh. I prayed this prayer. Lord, I know what it means to be dependent on you because I have to. I want to be dependent on you because I want to. I know what it means to be dependent on you because I have to. Because I can't do it anymore. I know what it means to be totally dependent on you because I can't carry this load. I can't be a father, I can't be a husband, I can't be a pastor, I couldn't do anything. I know what it means to be dependent on you because I have to. But that was not my prayer. My prayer was, Lord, I want to be dependent on you because I want to. And I didn't even know what I was praying during that time. But the Lord used that prayer to change my life. That he didn't want me just to be dependent because I had to, because of my circumstances, because I felt it was too overwhelming to me. He didn't want me just to be dependent because I felt incapable, and I felt too burdened. He didn't want me just to be dependent on me because I had to. He wanted me to be dependent on him because I want to. That I want to give up control. That I want to surrender to him. And I want to tell you that that changed my life. That he started changing my idea of what it means to surrender. Because I always thought that surrender means loss. You have to give something up. But the Lord was showing me that's not true. Surrender doesn't mean loss. In fact, if he's asking you to surrender everything, he was asking me, if I'm asking you to surrender everything in your life, is everything in your life bad? If you're going to surrender your wife, are you telling me to give my wife away? If I'm going to surrender my kids, are you telling me I have to lose my kids? Like, no. Then I said, if surrendering is not for that, then what is surrendering for? And then he told me this. We lay things down so he can lift them up. We lay things down. We surrender things to God so he can lift it up. Surrender is not loss. Surrender is gain. And I want to tell you, if you don't have this change in your mindset about surrender, you cannot put on Jesus' yoke. You're going to always need to be in control. And I just pray for you that some of what I shared today, the Lord would start speaking to you. That you would start seeing that surrender is not a loss, it's a gain. And I want us to just end, and sorry I'm going so over, but I just want us to end with just spending a little time doing that. So we're going to enter into a time of communion. So there's communion cups should be in front of you or under your seat if you're in the front. And we're just going to take some time doing communion. And as we do communion, I want us to recognize what we talked about in Galatians 5:1. Okay, in Galatians 5:1, we talked that Jesus has set us free. How did Jesus set us free from our yoke? He did it through the cross. He did it through the cross. And that's what we do when we take communion, is to remember what he did. He freed us from our yoke. He freed us from the yoke of slavery that we feel like we have to do it all on our own. He freed us from that. So as you take the juice that represents his blood, and as you take the wafer that represents his body, I pray that you take a moment just to, out of gratitude in your heart, thank you for taking this yoke off of my shoulders, Lord. Thank you for taking this heavy weight that's too hard for me to carry, that's too burdensome for me to carry. Thank you for breaking it off of me. Thank you for breaking it off of me. And I think some of us need that reminder that the Lord has broke this off of your neck, that you don't have to carry it any longer. And so as you take of the cup, as you take of the wafer, take of his body, give him thanks for that. And then ask him this question, Lord, what do you want me to surrender to you today? What is it that I've been carrying that's so heavy that I lay down, but then I go on the next moment and I pick it back up? What is it that you want me to surrender and give up control of today? To give it to you so you can lift it up higher than I could lift it up. My arms are too short to lift this up or lift this person in the situation high enough for where you want it to be. Help me to lay it down so you can lift it up today. So go to the Lord and express that to him right now.